Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this April the 22nd on the West Coast, now April the 23rd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network and appreciate you helping us spread the word of truth. Truth that you are going to hear in a few other places, but they come few and far between. What are we going to talk about tonight? Well, tonight's the night that we bring on my co-host, our resident science advisor, Jim Murray, and we're going to tackle a few topics that have been in the mainstream media a little bit, some in the alternative media, and I have to tell you, the last couple of days for me, research-wise, has been, I guess, phenomenal might be a good word. I'm just tripping over the truth. I'm finding the evident footprints of what happened in the Gulf of Mexico incident, the paper trail. I did 2 hours on Dr. H. Hugh Watts, the story behind the story, this afternoon. And it was kind of interesting. I realized how much information that I've found, and we probably just scratched the surface of the issue, but it's quite compelling to see what's going on here. And we keep coming to the same conclusions that this is spiritual warfare, and this is these issues that we're dealing with, false flag events, attacks on the ecosystem, excessive nuclear radiation, radioactive fallout, the poisoning of our skies, our foods, our water, our minds, with all the garbage that's out there, the lies and the deceit. And you have to ask yourself, what kind of beings would spend all their time doing nothing but destroying everything in their path and putting themselves above humanity as if somehow being that way, living that way, acting that way is something to look up to? It's really a contradiction. They are a contradiction of themselves, those that call themselves the elite. How do I know this? Well, I do talk to God. Many of you in my listening audience talk to God, and you may hear God's voice, or God may impulse you to do something. And usually you find that is the case when you're out searching for the truth. Someone asked me today, how do you know really if you are seeing the truth? And I said, well, there's an evidence that comes out in anything that you're searching for, whenever God shines his light on it, you can see it. And I have the perfect song for that, Whenever God Shines His Light.
I can be, and I know that God shines. is laid on me.
Reach out for help.
Reach out for help.
He'll be there.
He'll be there.
With him your troubles.
With him your troubles.
You can share.
You can share.
If you let.
And if you let.
Life you love.
Life you love.
You get the blessing.
Yeah.
From above.
From above.
Heals the sick. And he heals the lame. Says you can do it too. In Jesus' name. I lift you up and he turns you around. And he puts your feet back.
Sick.
Heals the lame. And he says you can heal them too in Jesus' name. He lifts you up and he turns you around. Puts your feet back on.
Your feet back. Your feet
higher ground.
Higher ground.
Morrison's Whenever God Shines His Light. That's how you find the truth, folks. You find the light of the truth shining. And when you listen to this show or any other show, when you read a book, when you look at a movie, listen to an audio book or an audio tape or a radio show, any radio show, where someone is talking about things that you don't know of, things that you haven't seen, things that you haven't experienced, because you haven't experienced those things does not mean that those things are not real, that they are of God. And when you get down to the nitty-gritty, everything is of God. So it's quite simple to use that principle. Look for God's light. I don't mean false artificial light. I mean the pure light of God. As we talked about on last night's show with Christopher Holmes, he point blank said it starts within the heart. That is the connection and we come from God's heart. If we're made in His image, that would be an immutable law. And so we are connected to Him, regardless of what anyone else says. God inspires people. God inspired Van Morrison to communicate this song in a very unique way. He brought a message of truth, of spiritual truth, of the highest order. And it was a happy song. It was a celebration. God influences many people. He shines His light on their lives if they let Him. Our guest tonight is one such individual who allows God and the creation to inspire His work. He is a weekly guest, my co-host, every Friday night on Evident Footprints. As I mentioned earlier, our resident science advisor. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and my good friend, who I'm very proud to have on this show, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. I'm glad to be with you again. Do you mind if I make an opening comment before I forget what I was going to say?
Please do. Please do.
You remember your little soliloquy there earlier regarding what kind of people would spend all their time and energy, you know, just destroying everything in their path. It's interesting that you brought that up. I had a really unusual opportunity about 3 days ago to speak with an individual that was once associated with the CFR. And this person is getting on in age and apparently has disconnected from that establishment. But what the individual had to say was pretty amazing, although not beyond belief. And the words are still kind of ringing in my head. What was said was that these so-called elite are actually quite degraded, morally, sexually, and otherwise, and they have intermarried close enough that there is definite mental and genetic damage after, you know, considerable number of generations of this behavior. And so that may contribute to the answer to the question of what kind of people spend their time doing this. Just a little tidbit for contemplation.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that, and I would agree. In fact, you'd have to ask, are they even people? we should keep an open mind in that regard.
Absolutely.
Well, to bring us to a topic of discussion that's basically a continuation of something that you and I have covered over the last two or three shows at least, and that is the issue of background radiation. Is it really here? Is it is the Fukushima facility, nuclear facility in Japan, actually the root cause of this background radiation? And what is happening in Japan? We've sent out a request to our listening audience, those that are in the know in Japan or have irrefutable evidence that the situation is a certain situation, not necessarily what anyone is reporting to us. And we found out some things in the last couple of days. Would you like to share your side, what you've heard?
Well, I heard two things that were pretty amazing, and frankly, they sort of intermesh and reinforce one another, which is very interesting. As you know, I have several friends and associates in Japan, and I was speaking with one of them, and this person said to me that, well, actually, I prompted the response. I asked them point blank. I said, what is the story with the radiation from your nuclear accident over there? And he said, well, it's kind of strange, he said, because we have two extremes. He said, people have bought up every Geiger counter available on three continents, and they're running all around checking everything because they're concerned about it, especially foodstuffs. So you have in Japan literally thousands of people checking radiation. And this is, of course, normal citizens. This is not anything to do with any governmental agencies. And they have found, you know, just from their own puttering around, that once you get a safe distance away from the area in question, they don't find any strong indication of radiation. As a matter of fact, when they compared the present readings to the historical background radiation counts, they were actually significantly lower, which surprised a lot of people. But what most people were interested in was just, you know, do I have a radioactive carrot? You know, is my celery going to glow in the dark? You know, that kind of stuff. And they didn't find any evidence of that at all. And the Japanese people were actually hearing about newscasts done in the United States warning about the high radiation content and these big plumes of radioactive dust that have been crossing the Pacific Ocean and laying waste to everything. And they're kind of mystified. They don't know what, you know, what to make of that. Well, in a completely separate conversation that doesn't even have anything to do with that issue, I was speaking to a friend of mine in California, and subject of radiation came up, and he was telling me that due to all of the warnings and whatnot from the government, that he and other people have bought all kinds of medical supplies and all kinds of other things to help cope with the disaster that seems to be coming. And I asked him, I said, did anybody that you know of make any independent radiation measurements on this side of the pond? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, it's real. It's here. It's even in the milk. It's in everything. And I said, well, that's very peculiar. And then I mentioned to this individual about what I had heard from people in Japan. And he said, well, there's got to be something wrong. That doesn't make any sense. And I said, well, did it ever occur to you that maybe these radioactive isotopes and whatnot that you people are measuring were actually a gift from our own government? I said, you know, they spray all kinds of crap in our skies, and to take advantage of this latest calamity, perhaps they're spraying radioactive material around. And he was dead quiet for almost a half a minute. And he said, you know, he said, I never thought of that. But he said, I'll tell you something interesting. He said, just two or three days after the calamity in Japan, he said there was so much chemtrail activity on the western coast. He said it was worse than I've ever seen it. And it was all up and down the, you know, what appeared to be the whole coast of California. So I can't prove that that's the case, but it's pretty interesting that that you have this extra dense deposit of chemtrails, and now all of a sudden everything in California is becoming radioactive. Simultaneously, you have people in the actual territory where the event took place saying that local radiation readings are less than nominal. And not only that, but people who went up to the actual area where the disaster occurred, and they said there's no burning of the spent fuel rods, there's no, you know, nothing, no clouds of smoke anywhere. And apparently the rods have been completely removed from the pool that was causing the original problem. I don't know what they did with them, but they're not in there soaking anymore. And the actual reactors are apparently not doing anything that looks threatening. So I don't know what to make of it, but it sounds fishy to me. Let's put it that way.
Well, the whole event was a very anomalous event. And what's at the cause of it? What has been peddled as Mother Nature? See, it's very easy for any being with technology to blame nature for that which is unseen. Yet, on some level, we sense, many of us sense that this was all a false flag event. It has all the earmarks of a false flag event. Are you going to tell me that Mother Nature said, "Oh, it's April 11th. I think I'll destroy a country today. I'll create a tsunami and then cause the radioactive poisoning of billions of people." The Earth wouldn't do that. If you really think about it, now I'm thinking outside the box here. Yes. But it's certainly something to consider in and of itself. And when you look at specific details, why the conflicting information? You see, there is another example. You have a Hegelian dialectic going on right there in Japan. And what we are saying, those of us who have been discerning what this is about, is that it was caused by an outside force, and therefore the spin that we have. Why would these people suddenly begin telling us the truth about anything when all they've ever done is lie to us? You know, that's a no-brainer. So there's another reason for us to trust our own intuition and to do scientific testing. It's funny that you mention that, Jim, because I had proposed that question to someone about a week ago. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. They're probably putting radioactive material in the chemtrails. Why not? They're putting everything else in there. And I don't mean just aluminum and barium. They've been putting, basically, you could say they're biological weapons. The whole activity is satanic. So there's no justification for them spraying anything in the skies. Why not radiation? And they have other ways of releasing it, too. It wouldn't even have to be in the chemtrails. There are all kinds of ways they could do it. I don't want to give them ideas, so I won't mention those, but I'm sure they've thought of plenty of them on their own. That's the reality we're dealing with here. I know, as in every other false flag event, we always get to the truth, don't we? We find out who's behind it. And in this case, a lot of people would like to blame HAARP, but I can tell you that HAARP was not at the root cause of what happened in Japan and what's still happening in Japan. In a sense, this is happening all over the world as well. Different aspects of the attack on the ecology, the attack on humanity, the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, and even the atmosphere. Everything is under attack. Everything is intentionally being manipulated and destroyed. So, if you consider it that way, Jim, we're probably correct in assuming that some technology was behind what happened in Japan. And there were many reasons for why it was Japan. Probably the most foremost of those reasons would have to do with new technologies that the Japanese were about to reveal. In products, I feel, that have already been developed. And those that want to meter every breath that you take, or every morsel of food that you swallow to put something in their own pockets would never tell you the truth about that. They would never do that. They would never permit that to interfere with the system that they have in place. It's a sort of an extortion, if you will. Or blackmail.
Yeah, definitely. That's the best description that you could come up with, because it's accurate. It is a form of extortion. And I think another reason why, from the people that I've been talking to in Japan, they have a very pronounced interest now in breaking free from this entire fiat money fiasco. And as a matter of fact, their own economy is improving independently of what's happening in this country. And they have cited that on a number of occasions. And so, you know, there are probably those individuals who don't want to see any of the slave nations break apart from the control of these international bankers or money mongers or whatever you choose to call them. And that may have been a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, well, quite a strong slap on the wrist. I'm searching for a word. I agree with that. And to force them into a position to have to borrow money to fix all the damage. But what value do you place on the lives that were lost? Senseless.
Well, I mean, they don't place value on life, period.
Yes, but I'm saying in the eyes of the Japanese or humanity itself, what price can you put on a human life, on one life?
Well, how do you even begin to estimate it? I mean, there's so many facets to an individual's existence. There's no way you can evaluate that. I mean, it's
priceless.
It's on a scale that we can't even access.
Yeah, that would be priceless.
Yeah.
Without price. You see, to itemize everything, itemize every human body as a commodity. And every activity as a commodity, and the products that are created through manufacturing what have you, or the services that are created. See, this idea of service, get used to serving each other so you can get used to serving us. That's really the message in that. And I'm not denying the metaphysical importance of service, but you don't inspire people from the heart, in their hearts, to serve humanity by creating laws which force them to do that under a penalty, under some sort of punishment. You see, the very nature of that system belies what you're professing to espouse as a system. Portray yourself as the benefactor of humanity, the leader of humanity through the solar system and the galaxy and the universe, as some magnificent sort of creature that should be worshipped. When everything you do is destructive. I mean, look at the insanity of how we give these people our power.
Well, I have looked at it, and it's bewildering to me. The only thing that I could ever precipitate out of that seems to have even a kernel of logic to it is that, you know, the government offers, you know, to do things on behalf of the people, and people don't want to be burdened with any responsibilities of their own. So so they gobble up everything that's offered to them without any concern for reprisals. And that's exactly the stupid attitude that's gotten us where we are today. And I'm here to tell you that it's going to cease one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, while you were talking, it was dawning on me, you know, this conversation began with Japan, and we're already speaking in a spiritual context. But I did make the comment at the outset that we're engaged in spiritual warfare. So you have to address the spiritual aspects of what is going on so that we recognize that these things don't have to happen and that they're being intentionally created to control us and to keep us from being who we are. You see, we become the masters. The whole situation instantly will reverse the moment people wake up to the reality that we are more than we're allowed to be. So why shouldn't we be more than we're aware of being? I mean, our awareness of who we are is constricted by the system. We're imprisoned by it, almost to a state of complete paralysis. They just take their foot off the gas pedal enough to keep us moving, those that are still capable of moving.
Well, you know, in the opening part of the show where you were making your little introductory comments, you were talking about being in touch with God and being willing to receive various inspirations from that source. And the interesting thing about that is I know for a fact that people receive that kind of stuff all the time. It isn't, you don't have to be anybody special. You don't have to be a guru or a saint or anything like that to receive inspirations. The problem is that because of the way our lives are directed and essentially the way our programming is completed, we basically don't pay any attention to these inspirations. Now I say we, I'm speaking in generalities. I'm surely there's people who do.
Sure.
But we've kind of discussed this issue on other shows, and one of the important aspects of this idea of communicating with God directly has to do with testing of the source. Now, I'm not trying to say, okay, we need God to stand up and prove to us who he is. That's not what I mean. What I mean is when an inspiration comes in, it's very important to act on it, at least to the point where you can verify for yourself that it was something factual that was sent to you for a purpose. And once you've done enough of these proof readings, or whatever you choose to call them, these validity tests, then something happens to you and you realize that more than likely most of what you're receiving is actually something that you should act upon after giving it, you know, whatever consideration may be warranted, because it's coming for a reason. Now, I can't speak about what other people receive. You know, there's only been a very few people that I've known that have that gift, yourself included. But in my case, I don't get any kind of information about what's going to happen in the future to our planet or to individuals or anything like that. But I do get an awful lot of information that has a scientific bent to it. And my primary obligation, in my own view, is to immediately verify what I've been given, and then if it turns out to be something real, to do my absolute best to see that it's delivered in some way, shape, or form that they can benefit mankind as a whole. I would think that if I ignore that responsibility, that I'm essentially disregarding a gift that was given to me very early in life for some kind of reason. And the thing that's important about this is that the feedback of actually being able to verify by testing, by experimentation, by any other means that's available to you, whatever these inspirations are, actually causes more of it to be given to you because you start to be cognizant of this mechanism, you start to trust in it, and you start to say, hey, you know, there's something going on here which is much more profound than what we are normally allowed to believe. Now, I think most people tune all of that stuff out because it's easier to flip on the TV and listen to the news than it is to find a way of meditating that works for you, clear your mind of all the garbage that's in there on a daily basis, and put out a request to the universe for some kind of inspiration regarding some aspect of your life which could be beneficial to the world at large. Much more important to drink beer and watch the sports.
Yes. You know, while you're talking, Jim, you're bringing up something that is part of my research method. You're verifying the reality of what occurs in terms of inspiration when I'm doing research. I don't set about research on a topic with the intention of creating or conjuring up some kind of a controversy. I'm after the truth. But what I've discovered in the pursuit of the truth in terms of how the, we'll put quotes around it, the truth, unquote, on this planet is presented to us, it's illusion. And so I've recognized that regardless of the topic that I'm researching, and it could be a political genealogy, for example, meaning the genealogy of a political candidate or a politician, whether in office or even dead. And what I find is that after I discover all the illusions, the truth just presents itself on its own. It's there all the time, you see. The illusions are there to mask it. And that's basically what you're saying. Is this a process that I think about detail by detail? No, I just find myself in the beginning because of the information that's put out in the programming, in the mind control, in the indoctrination and the propaganda. I find it to be illusory in nature. None of it is based on general fact. It's all a presentation, a show. For some, it's even a game. So when you see what their methods are, and they don't deviate much from it, you described why earlier when you talked about their likely incest, their interbreeding within their bloodline, and the limitations that that causes. You've already addressed that issue. Are you getting the gist of what I'm saying here? Does that make sense? And is that what you felt you were saying in another way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a very strange process, and it's like a form of listening. I guess that's the best way to put it. And, you know, the thing of it is, if you're trying to listen to something, like somebody whispering, for instance, at the other side of the room, and you have some idiot that's playing, you know, heavy metal music inside the room with the speakers blasting out, you know, 100 watts of acoustical power, you're going to have a heck of a time listening, you know, to that whisper.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of a thing, you know. I'm sure that under certain circumstances, the universe could speak to you in a much more direct manner. But generally speaking, it is a kind of a whisper. And as a result of that, it's beneficial to be in a place where you can collect your thoughts, you can focus on something and empty your mind. And then under those conditions, it appears that we become sensitive to various things. And if you put out a request for specific information, or if you're already contemplating something, or the third category is you're just meditating because it's comfortable to do that, and all of a sudden something is given to you without a request. Those three things happen. And mm-hmm. the thing of it is that once you get one of these things, you're not supposed to ignore it. You have to work on the assumption it was given to you for a reason. And the interesting thing is, I believe that these whispers from the universe are basically tailored, custom tailored, I might add, to the attributes of the individual who hears it.
It's a frequency, yeah.
So, in other words, if you do hear something, you can almost bet that it was sent to you for a reason. You know, like maybe you have some particular tidbit of knowledge or a talent, or you're in a position, you know, technologically or geologically or politically to do something with whatever is given to you. And so if you really look at it from that point of view, everybody is a receiver. Everybody is a spinoff from the main creator. And we've got this tendency to catch those whispers from the universe. I think it's our responsibility to tune into this stuff and see what we can do with it, rather than to ignore it and say, well, you know, that's all that psychic crap. It can't be real. It doesn't amount to anything. You know, a lot of people identify it with these serial killers and all of this other negative stuff, because they're always talking about hearing voices. Mm-hmm. All of the, you know, I heard a voice tell me to, you know, to rape and murder this person or something of that sort. Well, I'm sure that goes on, you know, in twisted minds. But we're addressing people who hopefully are not of that ilk. And there's another softer, more benevolent voice that we can all access. And if we did that more responsibly, I think that you'd find a lot more useful information would start to surface regarding the plight of our planet. I'm here to tell you that if we don't do something about all these things in the very near future, we're going to have possibly an irreversible situation on our hands. Things are getting out of control very, very quickly. And speaking of hearing whispers, I have something else that I'm going to share with you, if it's okay, Don.
Sure, go ahead.
I was speaking to another friend of mine in Japan a week or so ago, and this person told me something really interesting. Apparently, there is a very well-known psychic who has an incredible track record, and this individual had prophesied quite some time before the recent Japanese tragedy, that there was going to be a quake which was going to cause, you know, unbelievable turmoil in the country of Japan. And the source of it was never discussed or in any way hinted at. But the interesting thing that was stated was that within several months of the tragedy in Japan, something similar would happen to the West Coast of the United States. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that this is true, because I have no access to it. I don't know anything about the abilities of this person. But I think that that's a warning that's worth at least listening to, because there's been so much stuff going on over the years that hint at the fact that something like that could happen. And now we're talking about the possibility of weapons and other unknown technologies that can bring these things about. It's just a thought that's worth contemplating. And if nothing else, just remembering in case it does happen.
Yes. Well, it's fantastic that you brought that up, because I was, for the past few days, in this research I've been doing, and in the space that that puts me in. It's almost like I'm transcending the third dimension, and I'm time traveling, in a sense, to just to use a phrase to describe some of the process. And I noticed that the things that I'm discovering are fitting patterns that are identifiable. I've been down that path before, and I recognize them. So I expect at some point to find them, and when I do, I act upon it. These processes that you're describing, Jim, when you describe the individual who is getting the message, and maybe it's coming in distorted or garbled or scrambled, and or it could come through clearly, and the person doesn't give it a second thought, or there are those that act upon it. They learn to be proactive when they do that. They learn to take back their own power. They learn to cut off this siphoning or this vampirism of our life force, which is really why everybody feels so lousy. That's why people are tired. People are ill. And there, we could go into all the reasons for that and what that really is, but they're complaining about aches and pains, or head colds, allergies to things in the environment, allergies to things that they eat. And it must be a horrible existence to constantly deal with those issues when we have a medical community that has the technology and the knowledge that there are cures for diseases. There are ways to reverse these trends in people's energy fields, in their health, in their activities, which would only make them more productive. If you want to talk about the positive benefits, they could produce more goods and have more money to consume more goods. After all, that's the program, is to teach us to become consumers. So there would be a good side to us being healthy. And leaving the number of people on the planet as it stands right now wouldn't be a bad idea either, because you'd have lots of customers. So you'd have to ask yourself, if they want to undo all this, what kind of system is taking over? Is it an off-planet system from some, you know, another planet of warmongers or demons, Satanists, if you want to call them that? Are we just viewing this, the results of this developing behind the scenes? And I think that's really what's happening, is that they've lied to us about everything, even that issue. And I have firsthand experience, and you, Jim Murray, have firsthand experience in the area of advanced spaceships. You've even touched them being built. Now, if they had the capabilities of what you find in other parts of the universe is a different question, but you were involved in that type of research, and you know others who were involved in that type of research. It's within the realm of your experience. Does that mean that everything that you've experienced and everything you say about it or write about it or demonstrate about it is a lie because the powers that be don't want others to be aware of these things? Because then we gain or reclaim our power. We become proactive instead of reactive. We become in charge, and not in an egotistical way, but to come into the realization of why we are here and the purpose of life. And it's not to suffer. We have too many aids, too many aspects to the whole game, if you want to call life a game, that we get help from all kinds of different places. If we're willing to, like you said, listen to that whispering voice, because that whisper turns into a roar when you open up to the creation and to the creator.
That's true. And, you know, I want to comment on something too, Don, that is directly intermingled with that line of thinking. You know, we have, as a result of the way our society has been structured, we have this really annoying craving or obsession for instant gratification. And, you know, it shows up in everything. You know, from cake mixes to hairsprays to, recording a TV show. I mean, just everything you can think of is designed to throw another immediate form of gratification at you. And because you can get it faster, you pay more for it, or you are supposedly willing to pay for it. But the interesting thing is that the real advances, whether they be spiritual or financial or technological, have actually taken many, many years of patient dedication to unfold. And it isn't just a question of listening to the voice or to the whisper. That's certainly the majority of it. But the second thing that you have to bear in mind is that whatever it is that's being directed to you or shared with you is going to unfold in God's good time, not yours. And so there's this interesting secondary aspect to this whole process, and that is that when you do receive an inspiration, you're expected to work at it diligently to bring it to fruition, however long it takes. If it's a lifetime, fine. If it's 6 months, fine. If it's an hour and a half, fine. But you can't decide what the timeline is going to be. You have to be humble enough to go along for the ride and just say, okay, I will serve. I will do whatever it takes to make this happen. And for some reason, and probably it's a reason we can easily understand, our attitudes have been modified and trained in such a way that very type of surrender, you know, to something which may take years of diligent work is actually against the grain of 99.9% of the people. And that's another reason why nothing happens. We're so used to this instant hairspray mentality that, oh my gosh, you mean it's going to take me a month? Oh, a year? Heaven forbid. I got things to do. I remember one time along this line of thinking, I was in a karate class in Pennsylvania, and it was a really fine school, and I enjoyed going on a regular basis. And I was there one Saturday, actually working out on katas and things of that sort with a couple of the other advanced students. And, of course, the sensei was there. And they come and knock on the door. And this fellow came in and expressed an interest in speaking to the head man, and so the sensei went over. And in typical American form, what this guy asked, and I was within earshot, and I heard it, and I could hardly believe it. He says, how many weeks, he said, if I join today, how many weeks before I get my black belt? I mean, if you really understand the philosophy of the entire martial arts attitude, the question is just beyond reckoning. I'll give you an example to contrast that. If you're in Okinawa, Japan, and you're serious about joining a dojo, you tend the grounds for free for 3 years to indicate the level of your dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And then they may or may not consider allowing you to join. And, of course, we all know that once you do get accepted, it's not a question of how many weeks before you get your black belt. It's a question of how many years. And then the other thing, which most Americans don't realize, apparently, is that getting the black belt just means that you now have the basics. There is so much more beyond that that it's incomprehensible. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, this whole attitude is so self-destructive. It's just self-limiting is what it really is. We put a timeline on things that we come to the conclusion is reasonable based on our own perverted and limited experience. And for some reason, we expect the universe hop to our tune, and that just doesn't make any sense any more than it makes sense going into a dojo and expecting to be a karate expert in a matter of weeks.
Yeah,
it's just as ludicrous.
Well, you alluded to that earlier. You said this information is coming at us all the time, which is true. It is, and it comes in different ways. But because one doesn't pick it up, one doesn't recognize it or is not aware that it exists doesn't mean that it's not there. It's just not being used. You know, that karate instructor should have said or or could have said, from what I hear in your question, never. In terms of the black belt, you know, that's the very essence of martial arts. Is the honor and the dignity of it. And there's quite a bit of philosophy that goes along with it. If it's taught properly. But, you know, yes, that's the average individual, I would say. You know, how much is this going to cost me? How long is it going to take me? What are you going to give me? It's a path of self-discovery to study martial arts. You're going to learn things about yourself that you never knew you could do. And if you approach it the right way, you are going to come away with an ability to transmute that into other things in your life and make those things work as well.
Oh, that's absolutely true. As a matter of fact, there are certain stratas or levels of expertise, let's call it, especially in Kung Fu, where it's taught on the basis originally that it's leading you up to a preparatory level for combat. But once you get into it, you realize that even though that's true, it opens doors to spiritual awareness and to other facets of yourself, which have been dormant for the longest time. And it's even a surprise to see these things starting to come to life or to be reawakened in you as you do them. I mean, I didn't really go very far in that field because of lack of time, not because of lack of interest. But even in the few short years, maybe about 15 years or so, that I was involved with that stuff, I was absolutely flabbergasted at some of the things that I learned about me, never mind about the art, but about myself, as you pointed out.
Well, it's a discipline.
Awarenesses and abilities and ways to concentrate and different ways of looking at things, all sorts of things that you would never have the reason to develop if you weren't on that path.
Yeah. You develop an acute awareness, too, expansive, that really transcends time, you know. And you recognize this, for instance, when you're sparring with someone and you're able to anticipate how they will move when you move a certain way. Or you even read their intent to move without you moving at all or fainting.
Fainting is the key word, because actually it isn't about thinking. It's about knowing. And
yes,
the thing that's so weird about it is that when it starts to happen to you, it's very, very startling. The only thing that I could ever make a parallel to in that regard brings me back to the very first Star Wars movie, where Luke was on the Millennium Falcon on the way to Alderaan, and to pass the time, Obi-Wan Kenobi was trying to teach him about the Force, and he was using some kind of a little flying robot, you know, as his adversary, and he was using his lightsaber, and he reached a point where this type of sparring opened up something in him, and he was very surprised that suddenly he had a form of consciousness that allowed him to block the assaults from this little robot. And he said, "I really did feel something." Well, that actually happens. I mean, I can tell you firsthand that it actually happens.
If I can interject something there, what you're describing from my own experience and that of others who've been through this is the releasing of the chi and the awareness of the chi, which is the life force. One becomes conscious of their life force. And, yeah, it's kind of startling or mind-blowing in a way. But if channeled properly, it becomes very powerful in every aspect of your life. Go ahead. I just wanted to interject that.
Well, it's actually true what you say. And the interesting thing is, in the beginning, you have to understand that the life force is already there. It's not something that you have to wait for its arrival. It's mm-hmm. already there. You're just not conscious of it because you don't use it directly. You use it indirectly. You know, it's like a charged capacitor. You know, you're so used to the tin can type characteristics of the capacitor that, you know, that's the physical side of it, and you concentrate on that. But the charge is there all the time inside of it, and it's kind of the same analogy. Your life force is always there, but until you start to interact with it, you're not going to necessarily have that extra dimension or of freedom or interaction until you do something that requires you to use it. And martial arts brings that out, and it's interesting that it starts with receiving information from the life force. It's almost like an extension of yourself. But you can then get to the point where you can reverse that trend, and you can use it to do things. I know people personally, and I have seen demonstrations where people break without touching. And when you understand what's involved, it's actually the use of the life force to carry the momentum to the object rather than your hand, even though that's what you may start off doing. And anybody who doesn't believe that this
are
is
you
a
still
real
there,
phenomenon,
Jim?
I can give you an exercise which will convince you in 2 seconds.
Okay, there you are. You disappeared for a second.
Did you lose me?
We lost audio on you after the word hand. You said instead of your hand.
Oh, I said, yeah, you can break without touching.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you may start off using your hand, gets to the point where you can project the life force with so much power that you can inflict physical change on an object somewhat remote from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of this stuff leads to. And I was going to say, anybody who's not ready to accept that this is real, there's a very, very simple introductory exercise that you can do any day of the week in your own home to prove that it's for real. And all you do is find a blank wall, face the wall, and let's say you position yourself 3 or 4 feet away from the wall, close your eyes, and take little micro steps towards the wall, and don't be in any hurry to get there. And the distance is going to vary for each individual depending on the strength of their life force and how far it radiates from the body. But you will eventually find a distance, and you keep your eyes closed, you will feel the wall before you reach it. It's like the sensation is like something like pins and needles, except it's not exactly in the flesh. It feels like something moving in front of you. I don't know how to explain it any better than that, but it's an extension of yourself, which touches the wall before you do.
Yeah, you could say the ethereal body, in a sense, because the ethereal body...
that's an extension of yourself, for sure.
Yeah. What you're describing to me, this has arisen in my thoughts over the past 15 minutes or so. You've touched upon this, which is... pointed out to me very clearly that you're describing what happens when one becomes devoted to being disciplined in their approach to learning something. Now, not everyone is cut out to be a martial artist, as you yourself pointed out. There, some people go into music or art, painting, sculpting, and the arts are the perfect vehicle for opening one's heart to inspiration and to connect with the creation. But it's the process of dedicating yourself that influences the amount of success that you're going to have in learning something that's going to cause you to become more conscious, to become a more powerful being, or at least put the power that's already in you, like you said, in the capacitor, to work instead of having it lie dormant. And I suppose you could look at someone that most people look down upon, like a janitor, from a totally different perspective, because if you realized how important even that janitor is, you may not appreciate the fact that 5 minutes before you walk down a hallway in a public building with a polished floor, that janitor had mopped up a puddle of water that you could have slipped in and fallen and fractured your skull or broken your neck and either been killed or paralyzed for the rest of your life. We don't even anticipate the possibility that might have occurred. So we demean the individual because we would not go mop up a floor for somebody and get paid for it. We wouldn't lower ourselves doing that.
And you know what? That demeaning thing goes even further than that. Because I have talked to people of all stages in life, even down to so-called bums. And what's really amazing is that every human being has a story. Every human being has some aspect of life that has made an impact on him, which may also affect you if you're willing to listen. And, you know, the idea of saying, oh, well, what can he know? He sweeps floors, is it's such an artificial and disgusting point of view. And yet there are so many thousands of people that are affected by this attitude. You know, it's almost like the, what do they call that system in India, where the caste system. It's almost like we have a hidden caste system in our society, you know, that we say things, you know, that indicate that we're not influenced by that sort of thing. But when you come right down to it, our attitudes reveal that there are hidden prejudices. And that's a shame, because everybody has something to offer. And it's just always been true.
Mm-hmm. And even that janitor, and I just use that as an example. I mean, this is stream of consciousness, so I'm not, you know, I'm not reading this off of a cue card. That janitor has developed his own sort of discipline in how he did the job, how he fixed what was broken, or how he maintained things so that they wouldn't break or break down. We take so many things for granted. And you really, when you know someone like that, and you yourself do, I've met plenty of janitors throughout my life and made friends with all of them. It was never a problem communicating with people. You say, hello, how are you? That happens a few times, and then you, before you know it, you know about his family. He knows about yours. You know, there's a mutual respect, this understanding that we're both connected to the same source. We recognize that, and all I'm saying here is that we put so much importance on status, as if what you have or what you possess is your status. And likewise, conversely, what you don't possess is a different status. Suddenly, the material aspects of life, or what could threaten us, what could cause fear in us, is what is most important in our lives. All the things that are born out of illusion, you know, it's amazing that we keep it's like it's an addiction to be under the spell of an illusion.
Well, don't forget, you're immersed in it too. It takes a lot of work to get decoupled from that. But following through on what you were saying, there's one other thing that's worth mentioning, and it does come out of martial arts, or at least that's certainly one source for the philosophy. And that is that whatever you decide to do in life, your attitude should be to be the best at that. So mm-hmm. if you're going to be, you know, a master in Kung Fu, fine. If you're going to be a janitor, then be the best one. If you're going to be, you know, an artist, a musician, a physicist, whatever, then, you know, really strive to be the best. Because the worst thing imaginable is mediocrity. And, you know, once you just let things slide, you say, oh, that's good enough, then that's the category you insert yourself into. And the thing about mediocrity is that it is a form of stagnation. Once you have allowed your mind to accept that limit, then that's where you're going to stay. And you may be very happy with your title, but in your heart of hearts, you know that you really haven't achieved what you could if you kept right on devoting yourself to perfection.
Yes, and that opens up doors to other dimensions of consciousness. And with that come many of the answers that you're seeking right now. But there's a process to achieving that. As we say, you know, that force, that life force, comes from within. And we are constantly are telling people to go within themselves and observe what's there in whatever way they choose to do it. There's no predefined path. There's certainly not a law for that. They don't want you to do that. But that's what you should be doing. If you take anything into your own hands, first know thyself. Study yourself and your connection to all things. And you will actually experience more connections to all things in your life just by paying attention to that. And the answers that we're looking for really are within ourselves. We can be our own saviors. And yes,
and indeed we should be.
Yeah. Now, there's another topic, and, you know, we're out of time here in a sense, Jim. We were going to bring up the issue of Antarctica and what may be going on there. Do you want to touch on that briefly?
Yeah, we can touch on it, and then if you want, we can use that as a starting point next time. Yeah, there's apparently a report that I received and shared with Don. I think it was at the beginning of the week. And basically what it said was that certain satellites had detected 2 miles below the Antarctic ice an artifact which was apparently man-made. And as a result of that, you had the Air Force and other military factions scrambling to Antarctica with these gigantic nuclear drills that they use to dig all these tunnels everywhere that we keep hearing about. And their objective is to drill down to reach this artifact. But as soon as they started the drilling, or shortly thereafter, this huge vortex formed over the object, except it was in the sky above it. And what's interesting is it looks like a spinning gray fog, but even when they have winds of 80 and 90 miles an hour, it doesn't move the fog. It just keeps in its original position spinning around and indicating that this is apparently either an interdimensional thing or some kind of an energy cone that is not affected by the normal laws in the 3D world. And apparently, some scientific groups from other countries were so concerned about this phenomenon. It wasn't something small. It's huge. And they were so concerned about this phenomenon that they actually requested to be removed from Antarctica. And there was some Russian scientists that left on that on that basis, and I think there was some from the UK and a few other countries. So something is going on down there, and now that they've got it started, I don't know where it's going to lead, but that's something that we should definitely keep our eyes on.
Yes, we would add another hour to this show if we went into that discussion easily. And I'm going to take your suggestion and we'll table the topic in general for next week's show, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course.
Now, I will say this, however, that it was a number of years ago, about 34 years ago, to be exact, that I was reading a book by T. Lobsang Rampa. And as I recall, it may have been The Third Eye that I was reading at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out for a walk one evening. I described this on another show, and I had one of these tenth of a second flashes of consciousness where everything there was to know just flowed through me in this flash, okay? It's like a flash of lightning. And I had this peaceful understanding of things. And then after the experience passed, as I thought about what flooded through me, they seem to fall behind a veil, okay, or to be obscured somehow. And I thought, well, was I just downloaded with some information that is I'm going to bring about when the time is right? And as I contemplated this, I saw that that was pretty accurate, that these were things that were either going to happen to me or principles of science that I would understand and be using in my work, maybe related to music. And so I found myself living these experiences rather than having them be thoughts. Okay. So I made some kind of connection there. Was it necessary for my experience to know this in advance, even in a flash? I don't think so, but it didn't hurt it. In fact, it opened my mind and my awareness to the possibility that this could go on all the time. Now, I don't know that I would want that immensity of information to flow through me at one time. Maybe that's all I could handle. And I think that's the path to consciousness that all of us are going to follow. When I had this experience shortly after, I had thoughts about Antarctica for some reason. And it may have been a phrase that I read in this Rampa book, but some part of my awareness was drawn to that. And I sensed an energy vortex in that part of the world. Now, I was in Switzerland at the time, so and way up in the mountains. So that may have had something to do with the frequency that I was on at that moment. But I had this impression that it wasn't like other vortices that are in other parts of the planet. Some of those are they're informational vortices that help heal the Earth or transmute certain information to the core of the Earth. And it's a two-way path. The Earth sends feedback back through that vortex. But the one in Antarctica was interdimensional. My understanding of it is that it's an interdimensional portal. And it doesn't surprise me that you bring this up, Jim, in the way you did. And I think that has been discovered, I would say. And there may be... usually when they pick up these readings off the satellites, they probably think that there's some technology there. But they have to be careful with what they do, too, because they don't understand totally the principles or the power that vortex has, what it's capable of doing. Now, that would apply to the intent of one who would use the vortex for a purpose. But there are things going on there that, again, have to do with space. There's no doubt about that. And we've said that about Japan, too. Is it a coincidence that these things are happening at the same time in our current history? I don't think so. Closing thought on that, Jim, and we'll put that topic to bed for the week.
Well, the only closing thought is actually the one you just instilled in me, and that is that, yeah, there's an awful lot of stuff going on, and I think that when the bubble eventually bursts, people are going to be absolutely astounded at the spectrum of things that have been going on and for how long they've been going on and successfully been kept from the public mind. I think they're going to be totally floored. And it covers such an enormous spectrum of activity on the part of so many different organizations that even that part of it will be mind-boggling. But as you pointed out, it's all cloaked in lies. And we are literally trained, you know, by the powers to be not to ask about this stuff, not to expect answers, not to worry about it. And, you know, it's all being taken care of by the appropriate experts. But it's also worthwhile to realize that there is not one thing that they have ever done that didn't have a price tag associated with it and strings going right back to your hip pocket.
Yes, well said. I agree. Jim, I feel impulse to do something that I don't always do at the end of the show, especially after your closing comment. Would you stick around while I play one more song?
Sure.
This is what we have to make the connection with here on this planet. This is the most powerful force in the universe.
Thank you.
Jim, that was Vanessa Williams and Brian McKnight. Actually, Brian McKnight composed that song. That was for a TV show called Beverly Hills 91210, Love Is. Beautiful song, and I think it encapsulates what we've been trying to say tonight.
Yeah, it was a very good song. The only problem is, for some reason, there was a lot of it I couldn't hear.
Hmm.
So, you know, what's interesting, I heard the first song perfectly. Maybe it's because of the frequency range. It was sung in a higher octave than the other one.
Oh, I see. Well, it's
anyway,
possible.
Anyway, I did catch some of it.
Yeah. Hopefully the listening audience heard it. there's not much more to say. The song says it all, really. We've got to rediscover who we are, who we truly are. And it's inside of each and every one of us. This is known throughout the universe, by the way. This is no big secret I'm sharing. And we'll touch upon some of these truths, more of these truths, next week when Jim Murray visits us again on Evident Footprints. Jim, thanks so much for being on the show. I want to wish you not just a good night, but a great weekend. This is Earth Day, and I understand some people are going to celebrate Earth Day up through the 24th. What you can do is pray for Mother Earth. After all, she sustains you while you're here. Give some gratitude. Do something. Clean something up. Do something positive. Get away from this Ponzi scheme of carbon credits, though. Put your heart into what you do this weekend, and let's see how the Earth responds. Jim, again, have a good night and a great weekend, and thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Don, and I wish you not only a good weekend, but a happy Easter as well, and I look forward to being with you next time.
Okay, thank you, and pardon me for failing to mention happy Easter. folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's guest, Mr. Jim Murray. Special thanks to Windtalkers Radio Network for making Evident Footprints possible around the world on the radio network. Over at BBS Radio tonight, we had Seth Hendrick on the sound. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And I want to thank the listening audience for tuning in. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. H. Uat. In the meantime, I wish everyone a very happy Easter, a great weekend, and a night filled with peace, love, and light. Have a good night.